Good morning. Right, I don't know if anybody here plays any word games or anything like that over Christmas, a bit of Scrabble, anything like that. No? Nobody plays any word games at all nowadays? Boggle, Upwords, nothing like that? Wow, what an educated bunch we've got here, haven't we? Well, my daughter, she likes to play lots of word games, I embarrass her, and she does all sorts of things. She comes up with all kinds of words, and sometimes we can even come up with things which we don't even know how to pronounce. Now, does anyone know what is the most difficult word to pronounce, the most difficult word to say in the English language? It's a simple word, but it's a difficult one to actually say. Does anyone know what it is?
Sorry.
Sorry. That's the most difficult one. And you know what? I'm not talking about sorry this morning. Not the game, nor the word. I'm actually talking about something similar to that, which is the word repent. Because that's what John the Baptist was all about. His message was simple, one word, repent. So, to understand the difference between sorry and repent, I want you to imagine me as a little child coming home from having played football in the park. Okay, so I played football in the park, I come home, I open the door. I go inside, I go upstairs to the bathroom because I'm desperate. Go to my room, take off my shirt, come back down, sit in front of the TV, and finally remember to go to the back door and take my muddy shoes off. What do I need to say to my mum? Yeah, because otherwise, probably before it gets to that stage, she's going to be shouting, "Jonathan Ball, where are you? What are these muddy boot prints all over the floor?" And you always know you're in trouble. Not just when it's instead of John, it's Jonathan, the full name, and the second name in with it as well. I'm in serious trouble. But the next day I go and play football again. And I come home, I open the door, I go in, I go up the stairs, go to the bathroom, go back to the living room, and finally I take off my shoes and I say, "Sorry, Mum." She's not going to be very impressed, is she? Because she's told me already, and I keep on doing the same thing over and over again. Well, I thought, well, the difference between sorry, which is I was genuinely sorry the first time when I realised the mud mess I'd made. The difference between sorry and repent is that when I repented, then what I've done is I've actually said, I realise that walking through the house with muddy shoes on is a bad thing to do and makes my mum unhappy, so I'm going to change my mind, I'm going to change my course of action. And I play football in the park and I come home and open the door, close it behind me and take my shoes off straight away so it doesn't make the mess. Then my mum knows that I've truly repented because I've changed my course of action. Not just said sorry, but I've stopped doing the thing as well. Well, at Christmas time, we remember the story of a baby. This child was one that was prophesied from long ago. He was greater than all those who have been before. He had a miraculous birth. And his teaching was a bit different to what the people had been hearing before. He was rejected by the religious rulers, and finally, he died a cruel death at the hands of the state. But we often forget about another baby that was born around the same time, a child also prophesied from long ago, who was greater than all those who had been before, who had a miraculous birth, who had a teaching a little bit different to all those who had gone before, and who was rejected by the religious rulers and suffered a cruel, undeserved death at the hands of the state. And of course, the second baby was born first, and that's John. He's the one we forget about. So my wife gave me some helpful thing to illustrate the story, and she said that maybe I can unfold the story as we go along, and hopefully we'll find out what it's about. But important thing for today's story is I know Christine read something about locusts and had sort of bugs and stuff there. I promise you, after Wednesday's experience, whoever was here, no locusts. I'm still traumatised by that. So, I mean, I love this story of Zachariah and Elizabeth. It's kind of comical, isn't it? I mean, you know, Zachariah is there, this old guy in the temple, and by chance, he gets his turn to offer the incense at the temple that day. Now, there's 20,000 priests around at the time, and they were just chosen by lot. So it really is literally a chance thing as to who gets their turn to do it. And Zachariah just about got his chance because he was getting a bit old by now. It was possibly his first time of doing it. But having had all this time to prepare, you'd assume that he was pretty well rehearsed in what he had to do. It was simple. He just, you know, had to go in and offer the incense. How difficult could it be? In, out, 5 minutes, come out, do a few ritual prayers in there, and then come out and pronounce a blessing on the people. How awkward would that be? Well, there was hundreds of people who were going to be waiting outside for him. And while he was in there, they would be joining him in prayer, also praying to God to send the Messiah to deliver Israel. 2 or 3 minutes, all over and done with. And it was all working well until, well, now this is where things get a bit tricky, because I have something here. An angel. There was an angel appeared. This angel kind of messed up Zechariah's plans. Now, you can imagine, the angel Gabriel. People think of angels being these sort of fluffy, nice creatures, but no, angel Gabriel, we know he must have been a bit scary, because the first words he always says to people are, "Do not fear, do not be afraid." And you can imagine that, you know, we're not used to seeing angels the whole time. I'd be a little bit shocked. But, you know, he's had the shining, the glory of God shining from him to all around him. And, I mean, I think it would scare the living daylights out of me. But when Zechariah didn't believe Gabriel's words, I mean, what was Gabriel's reaction? Was he upset and angry with Zechariah? Or was he just incredulous? Imagine it. He says, "Zechariah, your wife is going to have a baby. I know she's old, but she's going to have a baby." Zechariah says, "Well, that's impossible. She's way too old." I wouldn't let her hear you say that. That could get you into trouble when you get home. "Zach, you know, look at me. I'm an angel. I'm Gabriel. You know, I stand in the presence of God. How often do you see angels?" "Yeah, and do they often tell you lies?" "No, I stand here because God has sent me. This is not some kind of cruel joke." "Oh, you want a sign? We can give you a sign." "Yep, right, for now, you're not able to speak until the baby is born. Will you believe me then?" "Excellent, right. When he's born, call him John, all right?" "John, that's a good name. Do we have any Johns here this morning? How many do we have? What? Any Johns upstairs?" "Yep, excellent, lots of Johns. Need lots of that name. Do you know what the name John means?" "Do anyone know the name John means?" "It means a gift from God, or God is gracious or generous. So whenever you see a John, remember, this is God's gift." Don't laugh. It's not funny. And then, just as suddenly, Gabriel's gone. Now, you see, Zechariah was a righteous man. That's what the Bible describes him as, a righteous man. He was one of the good guys, but he was somebody who, in this story, he needed to repent. He needed to turn away from the unbelief, where he didn't believe what God had said to him, what Angel Gabriel had spoken, and he needed to say sorry to God and learn to trust. And, of course, now he had 9 months to do that. Well, can imagine now, the people, they were outside. They're on their knees, praying and worshipping God. They've got their set prayers, they say, and they're waiting. And they've finished their prayers, and they're still waiting. And they don't want to get up and finish their prayers, because it's a bit rude before the priest comes out to pronounce the blessing. And they're just waiting. They can probably tell they're just taking a while, because their knees are starting to hurt. And what was Zechariah getting on at in there? I mean, you know, how difficult can it be? Offer a bit of incense, say a few prayers, come out and pronounce the blessing on us, and then we're all done. What's going on? Maybe Zechariah had died in there. Maybe God had struck him dead. But no, Zechariah, he was a nice guy. It wouldn't have happened to him. Can't imagine any reason God would strike him dead. What was going on in there? It was taking forever. And then finally, after what seemed like an age, the old priest, he appeared. But instead of pronouncing a blessing on the worshippers, he's like, he's waving his arms, gesticulating like a madman. What's going on? And he's not saying anything. His mouth's going open and closed, but there's no sound coming out. Of course, they work out that he can't speak. And someone thinks, let's get something to write on. And gives him a bit of paper. And somehow he explains something about seeing an angel called Gabriel and his elderly wife's going to have a baby. Well, clearly impossible, wasn't it? Nobody was believing. But there was one person in this story who did believe. Do you know who the person in the story believed in miracles is? It was Elizabeth. Because she just didn't just believe because she was pregnant. But she also believed when her young relative, Mary, came along also pregnant. She believed that this was a miracle from God. It says, her words, which are quite funny compared to Zachariah's, she says, blessed is she who has believed that the Lord will fulfill his promises to her. It's very clear, she's the one who believes that God is making promises to her. And so it was, 9 months later, that hopefully we find that there was a baby there. Elizabeth had a baby boy. And 8 days later, they took him probably to the local synagogue for the naming ceremony. And, well, since Zachariah couldn't speak, all the neighbours and relatives, they came round to name the baby. They thought, what do we call him? Let's call him Baby Zach. I mean, because, you know, that's what his dad's called. And Elizabeth protests, no, can't call him Zach, his name's going to be John. But, of course, nobody listened to Elizabeth. I mean, what does the mother of a child know about her baby, after all? But, of course, they were wrong. Now, Zachariah was around, so he said, okay, let's get him. And he wrote down, his name is John. Now, Zachariah, as I said, he'd had these 9 months to work it out. He'd been a religious man. He'd been a priest. He knew all the right words. He knew the songs. He knew how to behave properly in the temple. But there he was, having come face to face with God's messenger and realized that all along he got it wrong. And when he wrote, his name is John, this was his sign that he really had repented. He'd really had trusted in God. Before, he'd maybe just trusted in his own experiences, but now he trusted in a God of miracles. Not just in sending John to prepare the way for the Messiah, but that also God was going to send the Messiah too. Both Zachariah and Elizabeth agreed that the baby should be called John, gift from God. And he certainly was a gift, and he really truly did make them happy. And suddenly, Zachariah could speak again. He was jumping around, singing and praising God with all his heart. But remember, the angel had told Zachariah that this was going to be no ordinary child. This child was going to be a prophet who was going to prepare the way for God's people, to prepare the way for the Messiah to come. This child was to be the new Elijah. Now, do you know anything about Elijah? You think of what sort of character Elijah might have been. You see, when you read about him in the Old Testament, well, let's say he's not the sort of character that I really want my children to follow, because he was really quite rude to people, and he just made fun of his opponents. And you saw the clothes that he wore. They were scratchy camel hair ones. You know, if his character wasn't prickly enough, his clothes certainly were. And John, like Elijah, believed wholeheartedly in the message which he'd been given, which, like Elijah's message, was, if I can work out where this comes, was the message, repent. This was his message, just repent. Say sorry to God for not believing in him, and then turn away from those things which they're doing wrong. John's message was one of turning from your own way and choosing God's way, trusting God to save you. That was what was needed to prepare the way for the Messiah. The Messiah didn't need a fancy home and a big castle, not even a palace. He was born in a stable. He just needed people to turn from their old ways and turn to trust in God and rely on him to save them, that they couldn't save themselves. That was what was going to prepare the way for the Messiah. And that's what prepares us to meet with Jesus today, to repent, to turn from thinking we can do things by ourselves and to put our trust in God and follow his ways. Go Jesus' way because he knows what is best. There came a man who was sent from God. His name was John. He came as a witness to testify about the light, so that through him everyone might believe. He himself was not the light, but he came to testify about the light. The true light who gives light to every man was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him.